and welcome to another episode of Downtime at the Cranston Public Library. We're a podcast for cool people who love libraries, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we've been watching, and what we've been loving. I'm your host, Taylor, and the branch librarian at the Oak Law Branch Library, and my pronouns are she, her.
Hi, I'm Diamond Bush. I am currently the president of the Cornucopia of Rhode Island, a section of the Rhode Island Library Association that supports Rhode Island's library community of color. I'm also a research and instruction librarian at Bryant University in Smithfield.
Hi, I'm Beatrice Pulliam. I am currently president of the Rhode Island Library Association, and I'm also director of technology and information services at the Providence Public Library.
Thank you both for joining me. A little bit later in the show, we will talk about both of your roles in RILA, and we'll talk a little bit about Corey and what that section of RILA has been doing to promote DEI within our state library community. But before we get into that, let's start off as we always do with, what have you been reading?
So I'm currently reading American Jezebel. It's about Anne Hutchinson. I'm reading it because I'm leading a book club with an organization I'm a part of. So that's what I'm reading right now. My to-be-read list is very long.
Can you give our listeners a little bit of an idea of what it's about?
So it's about Anne Hutchinson, who was one of the founders of Rhode Island. She was banished from Massachusetts. It's more about like religious freedom. So it's just a story of her life.
Oh, that's interesting, because we hear all about Roger Williams and kind of like him separating from Massachusetts and creating Rhode Island in order for to have more religious freedom. But I feel like I've never heard of this person before, and I've lived in Rhode Island my whole life.
So. Yes. Yeah, she worked with Roger Williams.
Awesome.
I just finished The Beekeeper of Aleppo, and that was a book club selection from a book club at my library. And I don't tend to read a ton of fiction on my off time. I tend to gravitate towards nonfiction, so that Anne Hutchinson book sounds really interesting. So by joining a book club at where I work, that I know I'm going to get like a good dose of fiction. So it's been great fun. It's a book club that's been going on for a long time, and it's always an interesting discussion, especially if there's disagreement about whether people like the book. Surprise.
Great. I'm kind of the opposite of you, Beatrice. I usually read a majority fiction, and I frequently struggle with reading nonfiction. It's something I've kind of like a goal of mine this year is to read more nonfiction. And I guess one of the ways I've tried to do that is I picked up a graphic nonfiction called The Free Speech Handbook by Ian Rosenberg. And the art is done by Mike Cavallaro. And it's fantastic. I'm almost done. I think I have like one or two chapters left. It's actually taken me quite a while, even though it's a graphic novel, to get through it, because it's packed with the details of all of these cases that were like pivotal cases for the First Amendment and free speech in our country, like Supreme Court cases. And I like how the author has kind of each chapter kind of is a juxtaposition between like a current free speech issue or like a really recent free speech issue that we're dealing with. And then like flashing back to the Supreme Court case that is kind of relevant to that same issue. So it's been super informative. I feel like I've learned more about the First Amendment and free speech and the case law related to the First Amendment reading this book than I did any time I was in school. And I think it should be like required reading basically for anyone who wants to talk about the First Amendment in any context, which therefore is like probably everyone at some point in their life.
We should probably swap reading lists.
Yeah, I mean, it's not clear who's the guest and who is me, but I mean, if you go into the backlog of episodes and just check out the like reading book section of past episodes, a lot of great stuff there. Our guests bring their A game in terms of book recommendations, and I know it's a lot of stuff that I end up adding to my to read list. I forgot even how I found out about this book. It was one of those that I like got on it when it was still like on order, or like really, like I was really far down in the hold list. So by the time I got it, I was like, I don't even remember how I found out about this, but I'm happy I got it and I read it because it like I said, it's been fantastic in me deepening my understanding of the First Amendment and exactly what free speech means in our country in terms of what the Constitution says and then what all the case law that the Supreme Court has done to support it.
During the pandemic, I bought a ton of books. And so like Diamond, I have a bookshelf of a lot of nonfiction titles to dig into. So that's what I'll be doing on vacation.
Is there one that you're particularly excited about, like where you think you're going to start in terms of digging into your
PR? So, it'll probably be the memoir of the late Cicely Tyson.
Oh, okay.
Which I purchased as soon as it came out, but I have not cracked it open yet. And I remember enjoying the biography of Miles Davis, who she was married to once upon a time. And that's a book that I've gone back to a bunch of times because it was just really funny. It was just a very funny read and just an interesting history of like early jazz, which I'm also interested in. So
her book's on my shelf as well. So
not enough time. Everyone thinks we read books every day. Because they work. No, I know. If only.
I would be way further in my to-read list if I could read every day. And sometimes when I'm reading for professional stuff, like I'm part of the features team for No Flying, No Tights, which is a review site for librarians and schools and other kind of like people interested in graphic novels, but its main focus is professionals looking to purchase graphic novels for their collection. And so I'll be reading graphic novels that are like for this, you know, this team that I'm on, professional development related stuff. And I'll like feel guilty that I'll be like, patrons are going to come in and be like, she's just reading a comic back there. What is she doing? And I'm like, it's work, I promise. So besides reading, have either of you been watching anything interesting lately?
I would say a show that I'm really interested in is Abbott Elementary. I try to keep up with that. Then Yellowstone, I caught up with that over winter break. So
I'm a huge kind of spy thriller, espionage, not quite sci-fi, but maybe to the brink viewer. And so I've just started watching a series on Netflix called The Station Agent, which is really cool. It takes place in the U.S. and I don't want to give too much away, but it's about an FBI agent and the things that he gets into. And I didn't know any of the actors that were in it, which was actually kind of refreshing. So it's an all new cast to me.
Yeah, you can come in like without any preconceived notions about like the type of character that they usually play or anything like that.
Exactly. So high stakes political dramas are my escape, which is totally weird. Given what time we live in right now.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I feel like my parents just started watching something because my mom was telling me about it. That would be right up your alley because it was kind of had to do with someone who was like CIA and like works directly kind of like with the president and like the secret assignment. But I'm pretty sure it was on Netflix because my parents peruse Netflix a lot. I feel like it had Knight in it. The Knight Agent.
Oh, my God. Is that not what I said?
Oh, is that what you said?
I meant. I was thinking of something else. I meant the Knight Agent. Yeah. Sorry. The Knight Agent.
Okay. All right. Well, never mind then. I was like, oh, if I could just think of the name of it, it seems like it would be right up your alley.
All right, correct. Great. The Knight Agent.
All right. Yeah. Like I said, my mom said it was really good. And she was like, I know it's not like usually what you would go for, but I think you would like it. And
yeah, I think I've pretty much watched all of those type of shows, either when they were on TV or I watch a lot of British television. So looking for the British, something new in that sort of genre on the British side.
Yeah. I think I'm going to start watching Luther, speaking of British shows.
Oh, yeah. There's a new movie out, which I haven't let myself watch it yet.
I'm only on the first episode of the series, the original series, I'm about to catch up on.
I love the music on that series.
And keeping in the vein with British television, but a little more fantasy end of things is, and going back to things that my mom kind of got me into, is her and I started watching The Discovery of Witches together, which I know is a little bit of an older show, but I think the third season came out fairly recently. And so she was like, I want to do a rewatch before I watch the third season. Do you want to watch it with me? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I've been enjoying it so far. Yeah, it's one of those things that you also kind of feel like you don't want to give too much away about it, because there's lots of like reveals. But it's kind of like modern setting. This woman who's a historian at Oxford, and she's doing research. But she's also a witch, but she doesn't really use her powers and doesn't really like associate with the witch community too much. She kind of just wants to like be a normal person and focus on her academic work. And basically her academic work kind of crosses with the magical, and they call them creatures, is witches, vampires, and demons. So it's like kind of one of those shows that it's like secretly they've been walking among us the whole time. And so we haven't got that far into it, but so far I'm really, we got to like the fourth episode the other night, and I'm starting to get sucked in. I'm starting to look forward to us hanging out so that I can watch the next ones, because it has been, it's been really interesting, and an interesting kind of take on vampires that gels with kind of our modern conception of vampires a little bit, but also is different. So yeah, I've been enjoying that a lot.
I love that series. I usually like a time traveling series as well, so I won't spoil anything for you. What's funny is that thinking about demons with, I know we're going to talk about DEI, but thinking about demons with their, they had their own sort of diversity and equity issues within their subculture, which is kind of interesting to watch on play and to think about.
Yeah, that there's a kind of like all the in-group fighting of the different creatures. You would think that like, since they're on the minority of society, that they would all want to kind of like band together and protect each other. But it's like, no, they have all these prejudices in the group against each other, and who wants
there's to always a pecking power. Order.
Yeah. Exactly. So the show is definitely showing that, but through a fantasy setting as opposed to the real world pecking order. And we'll return to the show after a quick break. The library is launching a new collection, School Tools. Check out tools, toys, games, and interesting objects for learning and play from Central Library, including a microscope, toy cash register, robots, and more. The tools are meant to support parents who are teaching at home and encourage kids to pursue their passions. If you have suggestions or feedback for this new collection, email Emily at emilybrown@cranstonlibrary.org. Looking for a movie to watch? Canopy has over 30,000 feature films and documentaries for you to stream for free. Log in using your Cranston Library card and receive 8 free play credits each month. That's 8 movies every month that you can watch for free. You can watch the 2016 Academy Award-winning film Moonlight, Taika Waititi's horror comedy What We Do in the Shadows, and many more films today with Canopy. Go to cranstonlibrary.org to find the link to sign into Canopy today. All right. So I want us to have enough time to talk about what you both came here to talk about. So let's start off with Beatrice. Can you talk a little bit about what the Rhode Island Library Association is, what they do, and how they're different from like the state library, you know, in terms of their sure. role in the library community?
First off, we're an association. So we're a professional organization that serves, we're a membership organization. So we serve our members. Currently, we have around 450 active members. And we serve them through career development, education, advocacy. We also offer networking opportunities, and legislative action, which we've been heavily involved with already this legislative session in year. So it's an organization that is not just for librarians, it's for all library staff working around the state in Rhode Island, and also friends of library staff. So your trustees, your friends groups, and all that.
And so, Diamond, do you want to talk a little bit about, so within the Rhode Island Library Association, there are also different sections. And if we get even smaller, there are committees and roundtables. But Corey is one of the sections of RILA and a fairly recent section addition, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct. So Cornucopia Rhode Island, we also call it CORI. So it was founded in 2005. As a separate organization, but it's to support Rhode Island's library community of color. We became a section within RILA in 2019. So yes, a fairly recent being part of RILA, but we do support librarians of color, not just librarians of color, but those who also support other library staff of color, anybody who's an ally. That's pretty much what CORI is.
And Taylor, I didn't answer your second question, and that was how we're different from other organizations. So we're a 501c3, and we're managed by the board, which is a group of all volunteers of folks from different types of libraries and different sort of either, if they're not working in a library, they're library affiliated. And we're also like the state chapter of the American Library Association. So we're kind of the official state representative for ALA in Rhode Island. So we work with agencies, like you mentioned, the State Library, the Office of Library and Information Services, and a host of other consortiums around the state of Rhode Island. So anyone that's interested in championing and supporting libraries, we are typically working and collaborating with them.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to point out the distinction because for listeners who aren't initiated, and even I remember when I first was like going to library school and getting involved in librarianship, all the acronyms were very confusing. So I could see our listeners who aren't involved in libraries would find it equally as confusing. But I think the best way to think about it is, yeah, like you said, we're a professional organization. So you think about that there's the Rhode Island Trucking Association, which is a professional association for people involved in the trucking industry. There are all different professional organizations, state and nationwide, that help people connect to other people in their fields. And that's what RILA's doing for librarians and library staff. And like you said, friends, board of trustees, anyone involved in libraries.
Yeah, and we've been around for a very long time. The association itself is over 122 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, so it has had quite a long history in the state, and I'm excited to be one of the stewards.
So, Diamond, could you talk a little bit more about how CORI helps support librarians of color and allies to librarians of color and helps support DEI in libraries in Rhode Island?
Yeah, so one of the ways we do that is through our conferences. So we have an annual mini conference, which is held usually the first Thursday in November, where we invite speakers to talk about topics related to DEI. So just recently we had Tracy Hall, who's executive director of the American Library Association, come speak. We've had Dr. Carla Hayden, who is the current Librarian of Congress. We've had sessions on like sensory or autism, children on the autism spectrum, and different things on history in Rhode Island. So one of the things we do is our professional development, so the conferences. In addition to our mini conference in the fall, we also host a session at the RILA conference in the springtime. So again, that's another session focused on DEI work. In addition to just our conferences, we also have a blog where we share out different job postings and different opportunities, scholarships, conferences. That's actually how I got my job here at Bryant, because it was posted on the CORI blog. So we share that out. And then we host other social events, different get-togethers for the library community here in Rhode Island.
So a question for both of you. What do you find, I guess, like most satisfying or most fulfilling about being involved in the Rhode Island state organization for libraries?
It's networking, getting to know all of the people in Rhode Island. Rhode Island's very small, but just getting to build our resources and working together with everybody has been great. Especially for me, being new to librarianship, I'm just learning about everything that's available and the supportive network that we have here in Rhode Island.
So for me, I've been a librarian a bit longer than Diamond. So I am excited about being on the other side of that, which is providing opportunities for librarians and library staff to connect through RILA events. Also, I think, you know, just the advocacy work that we've been engaged in the last couple of years, just, you know, getting a chance to talk with local politicians, to talk with other folks around the state about what issues are important to them. And sometimes that culminates in, you know, an opportunity to testify before a legislative committee about, you know, any number of important issues that are facing libraries today. So it's kind of a combination of those things. And I've been RILA's treasurer, so I've gotten to see view the organization from different perspectives. So it's great to continue this tradition of having an organization that champions libraries and advocates for library staff around the state.
Yeah, I definitely want to echo what Beatrice was saying about like the advocacy. Like we've gone to the Library Advocacy Day at the State House. So it was really great to see the needs of the community through that. And like, what are they looking for us to do? Corey's kind of small, so it's just like seeing what things we can work on to help support our community.
I think too, because we're so small, it makes it easier for us to work together. I should say that the next Library Advocacy Day is on April 25th.
So if you're listening to this, the day it comes out, rush on down to the Capitol and see about all the work we're trying to do for libraries. But yeah, RILA, I think, has done, even in the past just few years that I've been involved, RILA has done a lot advocacy-wise between advocating for fair pricing for ebooks. This year, we're advocating for protections for library workers, teachers, educators, and museum workers to have protection from obscenity laws, which we're one of the only states in Rhode Island that does not have that law on the book as kind of like a positive defense for anyone who has criminal charges brought against them for obscenity because of materials in their collection. So yeah, RILA has done some great work in terms of making sure that the laws are working for our libraries, but also our library patrons and our community.
We're also advocating for better and free broadband access across the state to Rhode Islanders, especially folks that don't have internet access at home. Most public libraries have very robust internet, so they're often, a busy place and a natural place for folks to go seek access.
Definitely. And we saw that during the pandemic, that was like a major thing that people needed access to the library for when we were closed.
Yeah. And I think part of that too was, at least with public libraries, is that I believe all the public libraries have internet access capability outside of their buildings too. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know off the top of my head, so don't ask me what our usage is, but we get that information on a monthly basis too. So it's good to see that people are accessing, using our services, like wherever it's, you know, best convenient for them.
Yeah, for sure. Especially at a smaller branch that has somewhat limited hours. It's nice that we can still be providing that internet access for people, even if they can't come into the building and use it because we're not open.
Yeah.
So is there anything else? Like, what is a major takeaway that you want our audience to take away from or like about RILA or Corey that we haven't talked about already?
That's a great question. I think So one thing that maybe folks would not think that we would do is, and just this kind of falls in the DEI work that you mentioned. In 2021, we offered a professional development opportunity to library staff to, there are lots of sort of sensitive issues, either that came out of COVID or just, you know, it was also, you know, 2020 was the year that George Floyd was murdered. So there are there's a lot of tension and a need to have conversation. And so one thing that we did at RILA is we collaborated with an organization called Peer-to-Peer University. And they're an online platform, but they're also a peer-to-peer learning community. And they have a model of learning called Learning Circles. And we hosted, it was a cohort of about 16 staff from around libraries. And they learned how to facilitate learning circles. And then they learned how to facilitate difficult conversations. And so at the time, we were looking at a wonderful online course called How to Talk About Race. And by going through the facilitation training, they were able to then go back into their communities and run these learning circle courses at their libraries. It was very well received from the feedback that we got from the participants, and people really appreciated being able to have those discussions. One thing that sort of came back to us, particularly from the staff that were running the learning circles, was initially there was a hesitancy about, you know, am I qualified to have this really heavy discussion about race? And I don't think, you know, this isn't something that we learn about in library school. You know, or even facilitation is probably not something that people learn about in library school, but how to, you know, be a good listener, like really like sort of basic soft skills that I think anybody can learn were some of the things, takeaways that people got from that program. And at least it made them a bit more comfortable in just having a conversation. And this is, you know, this type of learning and opportunity is something that we hope that we can continue to offer as an organization. You know, we were fortunate to get some funding to offer this type of programming. So we were able to do it for free to library staff. So that's something that people may not know, that the types of things that we do. We may seem a little bit invisible, but we're very active in your local library through the staff that work there.
That's a really great program.
And if people want to find out more about Rhode Island Library Association and about Cornucopia of Rhode Island, where can they go to find out more?
You can find out about us both at rhodeislandlibraries.org. That's our website. And we're also on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yeah, Corey will be under
the sections.
Sections, yeah. I was going to say, I think.
And yeah, it's under sections. And then we have a link to our blog as well on there.
Fantastic. All right, so we wrap up the show with the segment I call The Last Chapter, where we talk about a library or bookish-related question. So I thought I would ask both of you, especially since we're talking about kind of highlighting some of the less heard-about sides of librarianship, if you could rewrite a book from another character's point of view, what book and character would you choose?
Wow.
Oh, that's a good question. I would say the first book that came to mind for me was Harry Potter, and probably writing it from Hermione's point of view. But that's just the first thing that popped up in my head.
It is a book with a lot of side characters that we didn't get rich information about. So I think it is a series that is ripe for being like, well, what was their perspective on X, Y, and Z thing?
I would love to see Little House on the Prairie written from a different perspective. I probably would want to hear from any of the Native Americans that appeared in that book, but like weren't really giving any sort of characteristics they were given physical characteristics usually, but no sort of character description. Because it's as a child, that was like one of my favorite series. As an adult, I have a different sort of perspective on that book. So there's a bit of a struggle with, like, you know, this nostalgic memory that is positive. You know, I would love to hear from any of the marginalized characters in that book, that in that series, that weren't really kind of given any agency.
I want to say it was called Prairie Lotus, a youth, like a juvenile book that was, I don't think it was directly Little House on the Prairie related, but it was like kind of supposed to be that kind of same era and vibes, but I think was about a family that were, I just remember someone who used to work in the youth services department and saying it was kind of like an answer to some of the like problematic stuff in Little House on the Prairie, but I want to say they were like Chinese immigrants, because that was, if I'm getting my history right, that would have been the time period where Chinese immigrants were coming through California, like to the West to work on the railroad and stuff, right? Am I thinking of, yeah. So a book that is addressing one of the marginalized kind of groups going on at that time might already exist, or I could be remembering that book completely wrong. I will look it up after the show.
Well, now that I'm sort of like really thinking. The other thing is, I just saw that there's going to be a movie of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Oh yeah,
which was like a big book for me as a becoming a teenager. And I don't know if I'm ready to see a film adaptation of that book. I don't think, I'm pretty sure there weren't any characters of color in that book. So, but I grew up loving Judy Blume. So that's just more of an aside.
The main character was household with two different religions though, right?
Right. Yeah.
So there is Judaism in the mix somewhere there.
Yep. And Christianity. Yep. I don't know if I'll be able to see the movie. I read that book like a million times.
See, I didn't. I feel like by the time I was like a teenager, it had like fallen out of fashion as like a formative book. I don't know if that was before that, because I think fairly recently they changed the edition to change some of the like really dated stuff about it, like wearing sanitary belts, because like any teenager who read that right now would be like, what are you talking about? It's like, yes, there was a time before adhesive existed. But that might have been like after I don't know exactly when they did like those edits. But yeah, I think it was kind of like out of fashion for that to be like the formative book you gave your blossoming young women.
I'm sure.
Not to be super gendered about it. Yeah, I think I was in the era of like the Keep and Caring of You by the American Girl doll like publishing company. That was like, yeah, Diamond's like, yep. Okay. But I saw the trailer and I thought it looked good. You're what?
I said I'm a proud Gen X librarian. So, and the idea of wearing a belt like was not a cool or possibility for me either. But that's so funny.
That was more of a time when it was written than even like the subsequent generations that read it. But I think it was like one of the biggest things that were like, we need to change this if this book is going to continue to be relevant to young people.
Wild. I don't even know when that book was written. Now I'm going to have to look that up.
It had to be one of her first ones, right?
Yeah.
I think we've all got some Googling to do after this episode.
Yeah. What a way to end this conversation.
Go out.
Our ease of talking about it, though. Great.
Yes.
That's something.
All right. So thank you both for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you'd like to respond to this last chapter question or send us an idea for your own last chapter question, you can email us at downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. You can also reach out to us via social media with the hashtag DownTimeCPL. If you're feeling generous, please rate and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, because it helps people find the show. Thank you again for listening. This has been another episode of Downtime. Downtime is a project of the Cranston Public Library and is produced by Elena Rios, Nomi Haig, Robin Nizio, and me, Taylor Cardillo. Audio engineering by Dave Bartos. Our theme music is Day Trips by Ketza.
and our ad music is Happy Ukulele by Scott Holmes. Links to the books and movies discussed can be found in the show notes. Remember to rate and review Downtime on Apple Podcasts, connect with the podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the hashtag DowntimeCPL, and if there's something you'd like to hear on the show, send an email to downtime@cranstonlibrary.org. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are the speaker's own and do not represent those of the Cranston Public Library. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. The Cranston Public Library name, in all forms and abbreviation, are the property of its owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. The content of this episode is the property of the Cranston Public Library and may not be reproduced without express written permission. Join us next week for more Downtime.